This hour's top stories. Myanmar's army says it has detained the country's leader and senior officials in response to general elections fraud, declaring a one-year state of emergency. At least a dozen people, including seven civilians, are killed as two separate car bombs hit Turkish-held Syria. Also in the headlines, the mayor of New York City acknowledges that Black and Latino residents are receiving COVID-19 vaccines at far lower rates than whites or Asians. Those were the top stories. Welcome. Myanmar's army says the country's leader Aung San Suu Kyi and other senior figures have been detained in response to alleged fraud during last year's general elections. The military declared the one-year state of emergency and said power has now been handed to the commander-in-chief of the armed forces. The coup d'etat comes after days of escalating tensions between the government and the country's powerful military. The army had called on the government to postpone convening of a new parliament. Military leaders claimed the last parliamentary elections were fraudulent. Following the coup, the United States urged Myanmar's military to release detained officials and warned of a response from Washington. Muang Zarni is a Burmese academic in exile. He says Aung San Suu Kyi showed her true colors when she went to The Hague and defended the genocide of Rohingya Muslims at the hands of the military.
She definitely has been failing since she assumed office as the state councillor position 5 years ago. That is the position that was created, outside the constitution of the military, using a loophole there. So she's been basically puppet master for nominal president that she handpicked. But most importantly, as you well know, she has shown her true colors to the outside world when she, decided to travel to The Hague to defend and denied genocide allegations that are very solid and credible against Rohingya Muslims. And also, she has been shown to be autocratic, Islamophobic and racist, I would even say colonial internally towards the majority ethnic minorities across Burma. And so she's been a major disaster.
Welcome to this hour's On the Newsline. Myanmar's Rohingya Muslim population has been going through tough times in the past years. In August of 2017, hundreds of thousands of them fled an army crackdown in their homeland and took refuge in neighboring Bangladesh. Since then, the Rohingya have lived in overcrowded camps in that country. Now, authorities there have begun relocating them to a remote, uninhabited island, despite calls to stop the move.
Bangladesh's government sent another group of Rohingya Muslim refugees to a remote and deserted island in the Bay of Bengal. More than 1,400 refugees set sail for the island of Basanchar. It was the fourth group sent to the island, and the Bangladeshi government plans to eventually move 100,000 Rohingya to the remote island. Bangladesh also aims to decongest refugee camps in Cox's Bazar, which shelters approximately 1 million Rohingya. The relocations began in December and have been criticized by human rights groups who say that many of the refugees are being forced to move against their will. The government of Bangladesh says the relocation is voluntary, but many refugees have talked about the move as being coerced. Rights organizations say the Bangladeshi government used cash incentives as well as intimidation tactics to force Rohingya to accept the relocation offer. Bangladeshi authorities say the relocation is essential to ensure better living conditions for the refugees and to improve the camps in Cox's Bazar.
As a matter of fact, Bangladesh and India were among the countries which from the beginning opposed the incoming of these refugees. As a matter of fact, they identified them as terrorists, and they did not give them what their rights under international law and under the humanitarian law as refugees. And we've seen that it's continuing. They see the Rohingya Muslims as a problem rather than sort of oppressed people that they need to be supported at this hour of need.
The refugee camp became overcrowded from August 2017 when Rohingya Muslims began fleeing their homes in Rakhine State following waves of attacks by Myanmar's army and Buddhist mobs. Hundreds of thousands of Muslims were violently uprooted in the months that followed, driven by a brutal military crackdown that killed thousands of them. What happened in August 2017 was so horrific that the UN called it genocide and a textbook example of ethnic cleansing. Those who survived the brutal killings sought refuge in Bangladesh and neighboring countries, hoping for a day to return home. But for now, it seems that thousands of them have to go on yet another perilous journey.
Where is the new place that the Rohingya Muslim refugees are being relocated to? The new destination came into existence only 2 decades ago. It's reportedly prone to natural disasters like cyclones and flooding. No one had lived on the island before the construction of settlements for the Rohingya began there. The plight of the Rohingya Muslims has been running for a long time. They are considered as the world's most persecuted minority group. And their relocation by Bangladesh to a remote island is just the latest in the difficulties that they've been facing. Are the Rohingya being moved to a place that will eventually lead to their death?
The Rohingya are the world's most persecuted ethnic minority, haunted by the past and denied a future. A citizenship law in 1982 stripped them of their nationality, making them one of the world's largest stateless communities. While there have been waves of exodus to Bangladesh since the 1970s, none was as rapid and massive as the one in August 2017 that turned the spotlight on the Rohingya crisis around the world. Today, Bangladesh alone is home to nearly 1 million Rohingya refugees. At least half of those who arrived in the country were children. The UN says the migration was unprecedented in terms of volume and speed. These people know that they cannot stay in Cox's Bazar forever, but it seems that they are not wanted anywhere in this world.
Well, they're not really stateless in reality. They have a right to be citizens of Myanmar. They've been denied that basic fundamental right. It's not the fact that, by history, they are stateless. Their citizenship has been denied. And you're absolutely right. That is the heart of the problem. And it will not be resolved unless the international community force the Myanmar government to rise up and accept their responsibility for looking after their own citizens.
There were talks of the Rohingya repatriation for the past couple of years, but to this day, nothing has happened. The main reason is that Myanmar's government was always unwilling to accept the refugees. Bangladesh has time and again pushed hard to begin the repatriation, but Myanmar has been delaying it, saying that it needs more time for logistical arrangements. The Rohingya Muslims also fear for their safety in case they return to their country. A UN fact-finding mission in Myanmar says that approximately 600,000 Rohingya are still inside the country, living under the threat of genocide. The world body says no refugees will agree to be repatriated without assurance of full citizenship, ethnic rights, to settle back in Myanmar. Given the Myanmar's leaders' reluctance to address the issue, the minority group's fate is a major cause for concern that is only being voiced by a select group of countries around the world.
Two separate car bombs reportedly kill at least 12 people, including 7 civilians, in Turkish-held northern Syria. The UK-based Syrian Observatory for Human Rights said the first attack took place near a cultural center in the town of Azaz, killing 7 civilians. 30 people were also injured in the attack. In the second incident, a car bomb targeted a checkpoint manned by pro-Ankara forces near the town of Al-Bab, killing 5 militants. No group has yet claimed responsibility for the attacks. Turkey has seized control of several regions inside northern Syria. The Turkish-held areas contain the largest concentration of anti-Syria Takfiri terrorists. And now reports coming out of Iraq suggest that a U.S.-led military coalition convoy has come under attack in the center of the country. Iraqi media say the convoy carrying logistical equipment was targeted by a booby-trap bomb in Babil province. Still no word on possible casualties or damage. U.S.-led forces and their supply convoys have come under attack in Iraq in the past months amid growing anti-American sentiments there. Anger mounted after the U.S. assassinated top Iranian general Qasem Soleimani and senior Iraqi commander Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis near Baghdad last January. Following the assassination, the Iraqi parliament passed a resolution calling on the government to end the presence of U.S. forces in the country. The Lebanese city of Tripoli has once again become the scene of clashes between police and protesters, rallying against the economic fallout of strict coronavirus lockdown measures. Security forces fired tear gas to disperse the rock-throwing crowd. The Lebanese Red Cross says its members treated people hit by rocks or ones who struggled to breathe due to tear gas inhalation. Protesters who began demonstrations on January the 25th say the restrictions are destroying their livelihoods. Over a dozen people have been arrested so far on charges including rioting and destruction of public and private property. The protests have left a person dead and some 400 others wounded. The government imposed a full round-the-clock lockdown earlier this month in order to curb the spike in COVID-19 cases. Now, Yemen has hailed Italy's decision to stop arms sales to Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates. The Yemeni Ministry of Human Rights, however, says what matters most is an end to the Saudi war and the lifting of the blockade. Our correspondent in Sana'a, Abdul Latif al-Washali, has more.
Italy has decided to stop arms sales to Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates to restore peace in Yemen and to protect human rights. The decision cancels deals to sell 12,700 missiles to Saudi Arabia and billions of dollars and other weapons to the UAE.
We hope this decision will be implemented. Though late, it highlights the seriousness of what Yemenis have been subject to in terms of death and destruction caused by such weapons exported to Saudi Arabia, the Emirates, and other countries participating in the aggression against Yemen.
The Ministry of Human Rights praised the Italian decision and described it as positive but late, calling on the rest of the countries supporting the Saudi-led coalition to stop supplying weapons, stressing that what is more important is to stop the war and lift the siege that has caused more deaths than weapons have.
We remember that lately some countries such as Spain and Germany decided to temporarily stop selling weapons to Saudi Arabia and then retreated, perhaps due to political pressure. We expect that after these popular campaigns, there will be wider decisions in the rest of the countries as well. We need the war and siege to be stopped in order to save the lives of women and children.
These decisions came after 6 years of war and siege imposed by the U.S.-backed Saudi-led coalition on Yemen, which violated international human rights law by targeting civilians, including women and children, and led to the worst humanitarian crisis in the world, according to the United Nations.
Yemenis hope that the rest of the countries will stop their support for the Saudi-led coalition and that these decisions will be the first real steps toward ending their continuous suffering since the beginning of war in 2015. Abdul Latif al-Washali, Sana'a.
At least 2 civilians and a security guard have been killed in an attack on a hotel in Somalia's capital, Mogadishu. 6 civilians were also wounded in the raid. A car bomb hit the front entrance of the hotel. An armed man stormed the building. Witnesses say heavy clashes erupted between security forces and gunmen. Al-Qaeda-linked Al-Shabaab militants have claimed responsibility. The group has been engaged in bloody militancy in Somalia since 2006 in an attempt to overthrow the central government. The New York mayor has acknowledged the presence of racial disparities in terms of who is receiving COVID-19 vaccines in the U.S. city. Bill de Blasio said black and Latino residents are taking jabs at a much lower rate compared to white or Asian New Yorkers. The mayor placed the blame on a combination of distrust in the vaccine among minority communities and greater ease of access to the shots for white New Yorkers. He vowed to offer people better opportunities to get the vaccines, particularly in communities of color. His comments come as data shows the coronavirus pandemic has killed black and Latino residents at remarkably higher rates in not only the city, but across the entire nation. The European Union says the AstraZeneca pharmaceutical company will deliver 9 million more vaccines to the bloc in the first quarter of this year. European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen said the drug maker will start the deliveries a week sooner than expected. With a boost in deliveries, the EU will receive a total of 40 million vaccines from AstraZeneca in the first 3 months of 2021. That is half the amount Brussels and the British-Swedish company had agreed to in August of last year. The two sides were locked in a dispute after AstraZeneca said earlier this month that it will slash the number of vaccines it delivers to the European Union. The company cited production hiccups in its European plants as the reason behind the setback. Thousands of Austrians have taken to the streets of Vienna to protest COVID-19 restrictions and lockdowns. The demonstration was held without police permission, leading to numerous arrests. Homa Lesgi reports.
An estimated 5,000 people take part in another massive demonstration in Vienna against COVID restrictions, this time without police permission.
Police had banned all major demonstrations planned for the weekend across the federal capital. Meanwhile, the Archdiocese of Vienna had warned of a corona demonstration disguised as a Christian procession.
Police forces reported numerous arrests as demonstrators defied calls to disperse, to keep the required distance and to wear face masks. Protesters called the government-imposed lockdown dictatorial and argued it wouldn't work in stopping the virus's spread.
I want to live in peace with everyone. I want to work. We want to enjoy our life that is given from God.
So the people going crazy, people have to work. If you don't die from virus, you die from hunger. Because the people have no money, everything is closed, it's crazy.
The Sunday rally had been proposed by the right-wing opposition Freedom Party, the FPÖ. The demonstration was among 15 banned by authorities to avoid any major danger to public health. And although party leaders called for compliance, their supporters still turned up. Local media also reported the presence of far-right and neo-Nazi groups. The ruling party said the FPÖ had reached a new low by embracing right-wing extremists and coronavirus deniers. Austria's third hard lockdown is expected to end on the 7th of February. And while trade unions warn of mass bankruptcy if the country doesn't reopen, virologists say the current number of infections is still too high. Authorities are counting on further vaccination and a test, trace and isolate policy to keep the situation under control. Homa Lesgi, Vienna.
That's it for now.
A diverse range of programs. Youth. Spirituality. Culture. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
Our website is www.parstoday.com/en.
The Limelight.
A new report headed by New York Attorney General Letitia James has found that the New York Department of Health under reported deaths due to COVID-19 in the state's nursing homes by approximately 50%. We have prepared an article for you in this regard written by Sharon Zhang, writer. This article is published under the heading, New York may have underreported COVID deaths at nursing homes by 50%. Stay tuned for the details of this article. A new report headed by New York Attorney General Letitia James has found that the New York Department of Health underreported deaths due to COVID-19 in the state's nursing homes by approximately 50%. The state health department has reported over 8,600 nursing home deaths due to COVID so far. The 76-page report released recently is the product of ongoing investigation into allegations of neglect of coronavirus protocols in nursing homes in the U.S. The report says that lack of compliance with COVID-19 safety guidelines, understaffing, and poor government guidance may have contributed to high death counts as well as underreporting. The report is preliminary and so far is only reflective of a fraction of nursing homes in the New York State. However, James' office finds that in many cases, there is a discrepancy between what the state health department and nursing homes reported and what the attorney general's office found in surveys. Because of the way that Governor Andrew Cuomo and the state chose to report nursing home deaths, the data published by the state health department may have been skewed. Andrew Cuomo came under fire last year for obscuring nursing home COVID death toll by reporting them differently from many other states with major outbreaks. New York only counted a nursing home death as such if it occurred at the facility. If the nursing home resident died after being transported to the hospital, the state did not count it as a nursing home death. Some have speculated that the deaths were reported this way in order to make it seem like the state and Governor Cuomo was doing better than it was during New York's historic COVID outbreak last year. A similar investigation by the Associated Press found that between June and July last year, the state may have underreported nursing home deaths by as much as 65%. To make matters more complicated, Cuomo's record on nursing homes during the pandemic has already been tainted by a controversial decision he made last March, which effectively forced nursing homes to accept COVID patients from hospitals after they had supposedly recovered. A ProPublica investigation found that the decision likely caused more deaths than would have occurred had the facilities been allowed to not accept these patients. James' report further found that state laws on reimbursement may have also allowed for-profit nursing homeowners to line their own pockets instead of buying needed medical equipment for their facilities, even as understaffed facilities struggle to care for patients, which may have led to more deaths due to failures in the care provided. Through a variety of related party transactions and relationships, owners and investors of for-profit nursing homes can exert control over the facility's operations in a manner that extracts significant profit for them, while leaving the facility with insufficient staffing and resources to provide the care that residents deserve, the report reads. Now, after nearly a full year since the pandemic hit the United States of America, nursing homes across the country are facing a financial crisis. A new report by the American Healthcare Association and the National Center for Assisted Living finds that over 65% of nursing homes have said that they are at risk of closing within a year due to costs brought on by the pandemic. The pandemic has also taken a huge mental toll on many nursing home residents, which James' report says is reflective of poor compliance with government guidance in some nursing homes. As the pandemic and investigations continue, it is imperative that we understand why the residents of nursing homes in New York unnecessarily suffered at such an alarming rate, said James in a statement. While we cannot bring back the individuals we lost to this crisis, this report seeks to offer transparency that the public deserves and to spur increased action to protect our most vulnerable residents, he added. But the problem is not just the potential underreporting of COVID-related deaths at nursing homes. Inconsistent reporting and a dearth of testing in some places means that it will likely take years, if ever, to understand the full death toll that COVID has taken across the U.S. An excess death tracker by The Economist, which compares deaths during COVID with previous pandemic-free baselines, finds that there may be up to 85,000 deaths due to COVID that have not been counted as such in the United States of America.
Food for thought.
Hello, everyone, and let us present you the statement of the Prophet's Immaculate Daughter, Hazrat Fatima Zahra, peace be upon her, and the timeless wisdom of God Almighty's final revelation to mankind, the Holy Quran. The Book of Allah is the guide of its followers towards the pleasure of Allah. Listening carefully to its leads to the salvation. The enlightened and conspicuous evidences and proofs of Allah can be obtained through it, and also the knowledge of His interpreted intentions and fear-invoking constraining prohibitions. His sufficing testimonies and conspicuous arguments and desired virtues and allowed endowments and gifts and obligatory divine laws.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
This man changed the world.
Allahu Akbar, Khomeini Rahbar. Allahu Akbar, Khomeini Rahbar.
Our bosses couldn't cope with the idea of an 80-year-old Ayatollah, which they didn't even know what an Ayatollah was, who lived on garlic and onions and yogurt, directing a revolution that was about to topple America's most important ally.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. In the name of Allah, the Exalted, the Most Compassionate, the Most Merciful. Salam, hello, and welcome to our audience, and particularly a warm welcome to our listeners of our program, The Man Who Changed the World, and as I say, changed all our tomorrows. The program is dedicated and devoted to the life of Imam Khomeini. May God bless his great soul. We're discussing some very interesting points with my guest, Dr. Hassani, on, you know, why aren't there more Imam Khomeini's? Of course, Islam came to perfect humanity. And there's one very interesting aspect which really is a phenomenon not understood from a materialistic point of view. And I myself, personally, am witness to this. I didn't know anything about this great man. I never understood anything about this great man. I didn't know one iota of where this man was born.
I hate to say you to this. I have to admit it. We still don't know about so many
thank you
important
for that.
Things.
Thank you for that, Doctor. I don't wish to
and
make...
I don't just say that to be humble. Or
no, no. We are I'm just saying... We genuinely mean that. Because, yes. As I say, even to this day, as you go, why are we having these programs? Because we want to go into depth about a man that perhaps we still know very little or nothing about. But the thing that I wanted to point out was that I was 16 at the time, and the first impact that this gentleman made on me... As a teenager, was that I was reminded of prophets in the Bible. Mm-hmm. Because I didn't come really from an Islamic background. I came from a more or less a Christian background. And I was impressed by the fact that this is the first time in the 20th century, or in a long time, for many generations, that's the first time I've seen a personality that really, really reminded me both of Allah and of his prophets. But the most important thing I felt was love. I felt I had to know this man. I felt I had to leave my home country 4,500 miles away. I may be exaggerating the distance. I don't know. It may be 5,000 miles. It depends on your flight and how you get to Tehran. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, I had to come here. I had to come to the very land, the very country in which this man was born to find out what was this thing that he placed into my soul, into my heart, that made me love him. Can you explain something about that for me, Dr.
Yes,
Hassani?
Honesty.
Honesty.
His honesty.
Yeah. Honesty with Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
Let's not get sophisticated,
yeah.
Complicated.
Sure.
Let's not get entangled with words.
Sure.
He was honest. Ask me with whom?
With whom, yeah.
With himself first.
Exactly.
He knew himself.
And if you know yourself, you know your creator.
And if you know yourself, you know your creator.
Creator.
There's a hadith.
Yes. That's right.
Man arafa nafsa.
Please quote it.
Faqad arafa rabba. But I have to make a point about this.
Please.
Very important and significant tradition.
Mm-hmm.
Because the thing is that unfortunately, mm-hmm. I say this with the bottom of my heart,
mm-hmm.
as a Muslims, we have all the values,
mm-hmm. quite
the sources, the true sources
mm-hmm.
of knowing and enjoying the beautiful life that God gave us. But we don't use it to the level. All the traditions, all the, you know, the Quranic verses, we only get a piece of it, maybe the beginning, we forget about the end, or vice versa.
Mm.
And we don't think about that.
Well,
brother, the only difference between us, just like I mentioned in the other program,
sure.
and different creation, different creatures,
mm-hmm.
is the power of thinking in a true sense. This is why Quran, talking about fikr, talking about aql, talking about tadabbur, which is different level of thinking. In order to think, you have to become quiet first.
Yes,
you have to become silent. We have a tradition to
that's right.
How can you learn, how can you listen to something if you always talk?
Exactly.
you have to find an isolate place with yourself, which is within yourself, actually. We're not talking about only material here.
No.
We're not talking about the physical aspect of being alone. You can be in a gathered, but being alone, thinking about your own stuff. And you can be alone, but working with the universe, working with the creation.
Could I just throw something at you, just right there and then, that the Holy Prophet, peace be upon him, mentions that if you are in silence, as this silence that you refer to, which is a silence in which to acquire wisdom, do it for 40 days, and it will pour out of you. In other words, we're not alone.
No, we're not.
You're alone with your Creator.
Exactly.
Prophet Jesus, peace be upon him, I wanted to quote this from the Bible.
And if you are alone with your Creator, you are everywhere.
Yeah. I mean, this is the thing about the prophets, that I used to read about them in the Bible, that Prophet Jesus, peace be upon him, used to go away for 40 days and 40 nights, as is quoted in the Bible, alone in the desert. For what? I mean, that's something that, you know, the Christians don't come back with.
As they say, something to think about.
Something to think about. Exactly. And he went to do
tradition.
His thinking. And that was where he poured out as the master, the teacher. When he came back to Jerusalem after those 40 days, that was the wisdom that was being quoted in the book.
He was a different person.
He was a totally different person.
He got the vision.
He got the vision.
When you get, brother, when you get the vision, you get the mission. Imam is somebody with special, unique, divine mission. Back to the tradition. Man arafa nafsa.
Yes.
Those who get to know themselves, their true sense, which is soul, faqat arafa rabba. Most surely, they get to know their Lord, their sustainer, who happens to be a creator.
Exactly.
The point about this very significant tradition is this. This tradition is not talking about something about impossible. Because when you're talking about God, you say, oh, you cannot get to know him. Because he is infinite. How can a finite phenomena, thing, material, whatever.
Well, this is what philosophers come up with, isn't it?
Yeah, we're not trying to get philosophical
about it. Yeah,
not.
No.
This is not the point of this program.
No.
I'm trying to explain it as simple as possible. This is another, if you want to mention it down,
we'll do that.
Imam Khomeini was simple in a true sense. The same way that Quran is simple. Quran talks to an ordinary person because Quran is, by the way, is the book of guidance. Wants to take you from A to B without any damage.
Any damage. Without any... Yeah.
And at the same time, talking to ordinary person, but yet talking to the philosopher, to the historian, to whoever can understand a different level,
exactly.
A deeper one.
Yes.
The point about this tradition, you're not talking about something impossible. Because if you get to know yourself, you get to know your sustainer.
Sustainer.
So the point about it is this. How are you going to get to know yourself? Think about it. I make it simple for you. I'm a weak person. If I know my weakness, the opposite of it, which is not weakness, which is power, which is total might, okay? God Almighty, we claim. You get to know the power of Allah. If you get to know the power of Allah, you are not going to be scared. As simple as that, I put it. If you're not scared of something, so what? You take steps to do things. You're not scared. You can take risk. You can be brave enough to take action. Nobody, you know, if they threaten you with sanction or they say, as they say, this is a joke, everything, all the options on the table.
All
this is another program.
Yeah,
you know,
we're
talking about
this. Yeah, all options on the table.
On
the
Islamic
really
awakening
means that
and ethical freedom.
They don't have anything on the
they
table.
Not, I mean, if you have something concrete, if you have something solid, you know, you don't constantly threaten somebody with it. You just do it.
You just do it.
You just come out and do it.
Exactly. I mean, that's...
Well, they do. The thing is that they forget that our option is on the table at the same time.
That's right.
And our option is something way, way different than theirs, which is, we're talking about God here. Somebody you can rely on, somebody you can trust, and somebody who can do anything possible. So if you get to know yourself with weakness, you get to know him with great power. If you get to know yourself with lack of knowledge, you have to open a parenthesis, you know, to remember, then close the parenthesis.
Yes.
If you get to know yourself that you don't have the knowledge of everything, then you know your sustainer knows everything.
Everything.
And no alim, He's the most knowledge one. Brother, all these words, this is not words. This is a reality.
That's right. I mean,
when you say God is Sami, it doesn't mean something that, you know, you think about material. God is not material.
No.
It means that he can hear everything.
Yeah.
He created everything.
To get back to the, you know,
to get to the point
that about Imam's personality. And
Imam, I started with saying he was honest.
Right. I want to get to that point. That honesty that created that love in my
And he was
heart.
Honest about himself. Let's not forget that.
Yeah. I mean, that honesty that, as you quite rightly say, about himself, again triggered or made us rejuvenated about something we had forgotten.
It started our engine, our motor.
Exactly. And that motor was not that it was the love of Imam, but it was to...
Very good point. You love Imam because of something else.
Yeah, exactly, because it had brought you back to your creator.
The credit goes to somebody else.
Because you're reminded...
Let's not forget, it doesn't mean that we don't appreciate things.
No.
It doesn't mean like that.
No.
Because we have a tradition again. Man lam yashkur al makhluq, lam yashkur al khaliq. Those who don't appreciate the creation of God, most surely they don't appreciate The creator. This is an obvious thing.
Yeah.
We're not going to challenge
it. And as you say, that simplicity, that honesty, really
simplicity, I have to emphasize, I have to underline.
Yeah.
In a true sense.
Yes.
Because when you say something simple, remember when Imam was coming back from Paris after 15 years in
exile?
That's right.
Yes.
He's in the plane sitting, you know.
Yeah.
Relaxing.
Yeah.
Just like, you know, we look through the window of the plane. This journalist,
John Simpson,
whoever, ask him, what is your feeling? He says nothing. You know how many wrong interpretation they took out of this?
Oh, yes.
Let me explain that. When he said nothing, it means that I don't submit myself to some particular thing that if it changes, I would become ballistic about it. Think about what I just said.
Yeah, yeah.
Anything happens, hey, what is your feeling after 15 years or whatever? Returning to your homeland. Nothing. Because I think about God. God is all the feeling.
Exactly.
God is all the mean. God is all the goal. You see, you get my point?
Well, that's exactly what we want to get to. That this beautiful personality was reminding us, because he, for the 20th century, became not the Imam of the Islamic Republic of Iran, but he became the representative for us.
By the way, he was Iranian. Only Iranian should love him.
Exactly. That's what I'm getting to.
He was Muslim. Only Muslim should love him.
But let me finish my point.
But that's not the case.
Please,
I'm
listening. Because the letter that went to John Paul II, the Pope, of the second biggest...
That's a different story.
But we'll get to that. But the Pope, the leader of the second most dominant religious grouping, if you like, in the world, Catholicism, he writes a letter to them, and even the Pope has to be reminded that he's supposed to be representing God on earth.
That he should have a divine mission.
A divine mission.
Don't
that he should
it.
Have a divine mission.
Exactly.
And because the love that Imam Khomeini brought for so many people throughout the world,
true love,
was the love of the reminder of the Creator.
Creator. This is the whole point.
And that's what we're
getting
to.
And we can go on forever.
Yeah, exactly. Because that's the perfection we are looking for.
Exactly. Where are you coming from? Where you are in? What the situation? What is the situation? And where are you going to?
So, Dr. Hasni, give us the manual now from the Imam's personality.
This is a good word, manual.
Yeah, the manual from the Imam's personality.
I like that.
Give us it in terms of that perfection. Because, of course, he's written books on this subject.
The reason I'm saying that, brother, because, you know, I'm listening to the words you're using. This one was a good one.
Yeah.
Brother, because I see Quran as a manual for humankind.
Yeah.
You know, just like, you know, I can give you another example. A factory which makes whatever, appliances,
sure.
You know, electronics, whatever. Let's say Sony and Sanyo, okay? They make these TVs and whatever.
Yeah.
For every device, they print a particular manual.
Yeah.
And no two factories makes a manual for a different one. Okay?
That's right. I mean,
Quran is a manual.
Yeah, Sony won't build for JVC.
And vice versa.
JVC or Sanyo.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Imam Khomeini's manual is learning Quran, get to know God, and follow the path.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
to get back to this love aspect of Imam Khomeini. Who puts that love there?
God.
Why?
Why? Because there is a holy tradition. Mm. There is a hadith of Qudsi.
Right.
Holy
so there's nothing complicated about this.
No, I make it simple for you.
Right.
I read it. Mm. I translate it. I'm trying to explain it. Mm. Okay? Then we understand. God says to his holy prophet in a holy tradition, he says, Kunto Kanzan Makhfiyan. God talking about himself.
Right.
I was a hidden treasure.
Yes. From Hadith Qudsi, yes.
Fa'ahbabto. I love to. I like to.
Mm.
To be
known.
To be recognized. As simple as that. Love comes from Allah.
But it's important because in the
English... You know why? Because if, English it wasn't, if it wasn't for love, if it wasn't for likeness, okay, there is no reason to live. Because we're not solid.
Sure.
We're not rock. Mm. We have to have some certain feelings.
I think for our listeners, we have to mention the point here, though, that the Arabic is much more sophisticated than just saying in
and
English.
And it takes time to explain
it. Just to say that he wanted to be known, that's not because of a need.
He loved to. He liked to.
Yeah, it's because of the fact that, he has the power to bring things into existence.
And
that existence is the perfection of that creator.
Exactly.
So that is the point we want to make here. That this
and this is a favor he gave us.
This is a favor.
This is a favor.
That's it. Thank you for that. And I wanted to get back to that point that you mentioned before about knowing Quran. Because Imam Khomeini says in that Hukumat Islami, he says, Quran was being recited by beautiful singers and parrot fashion.
Mm-hmm.
1400 years? What's going on? Why parrot fashion? Why does the Imam make such a claim in his book? Because at the end of the day, not knowing this book has been the problem. That has been the source of our troubles for the last 1400 years. And he brought back the true reading of the Quran. Even he's pointed out the fact that those schools of thought that claimed to know something about the Quran were erroneous in what they were doing.
And
because of the fact that they didn't have the key that was needed to take us towards that perfection.
The main key.
Mm-hmm. And that's what I'm talking about.
When you talk about Quran, again, we're not talking about something, we're not fantasizing.
Yeah, we're not fantasizing.
We have it. Mm. It's available.
Yeah.
This is example I give you sometimes.
Yeah.
We don't appreciate Quran. You know why?
No.
Because they send us to us free. It was sent to us free. Yes. We don't appreciate it. Anything free, just we pollute the air. Yes. We don't pay for it.
Okay? But if we had to pay for it.
Having said that, having said that, I give you another example.
Yeah.
Can you imagine if this particular copy of Quran was the very last Quran on earth and it was hidden in somewhere that you don't know?
Yeah.
How much you would pay to get back it, to get back to it?
Or, no...
Have you ever thought about this?
Let's go into that. Let's go into that analogy. That's a very beautiful point you're picking up there. Again, as you say, we don't give the value that needs to be, that deserves to be given. I mean, this has been a problem throughout our Muslim history. And I call it a black Muslim history. I'm sorry I use that word. But I have no option but to use this word. And the reason being...
And you're not trying to be pessimistic
about
this.
No, I'm not pessimistic.
Don't get it wrong. Right.
No, I'm simply using that word in the sense that we had valuable personalities.
Because here we're trying to realize the difficulties and throw a solution.
Yeah, these treasures, like Imam Ali, that the Holy Prophet refers to as the gate of knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
And we threw it away.
And who is the key? Imam.
We threw it away in Karbala, they were riding horses over the holy personality of Imam Hussein. That was different. That's a difficult thing for me to say. But the thing is that is the thing, as you quite rightly say, that is the price of this book that we don't appreciate. And this man says that whatever I have brought it to you from Imam Hussein alayhi salam. And I'd like to...
From the movement of Ashura.
Ashura.
Yeah, this is one of...
Yeah, an important build-up in the personality of the Imam. I'd like to go into that tradition, that why this plays such an important part in the personality of the Imam, hopefully in the next session. But definitely this is a subject we need to speak about, but this simplicity, please tell us, Dr. Hasni, about how simple, because you lived in those times, how simple was Imam? Because I remember you mentioned to me in our conversation that, you know, he was speaking to the people, the bakers. He was talking about power politics to the bakers.
When he said the famous statement that American administration, that is, again, cannot do a damn thing. Mm. He said it in a gathering with the Qomi's bakers at the time.
That's the people of the city of Qom.
This is how respectful he was toward every single person. He didn't see him as something different. He said, I respect you because God created you. God put you on earth. And God put some certain connection between us, all the relationship that we should or we're supposed to have with each other.
Right. And ask me
how he got it from.
Yeah, where he got it from.
From Quran.
Yes.
Again. Quran talks, you know, he said God is powerful. Mm. We understand it very easy. And somebody that who wants to get into different level of the might, he can study it.
I want to throw something in here straight away.
Do you know how you become simple? When you have the true knowledge, Brother Ajaz. Think about what I said.
Yeah, exactly.
If you don't know a lot of stuff, you're trying to pretend, you get so complicated. Fallacies comes from here.
But you're talking about humbleness.
That's another subject. If you are simple, you are humble, and vice versa.
Exactly.
This is not two different aspects. Brother, let me tell you another expression.
Please.
It says, two persons are afraid of an empty gun. The one who is in front of the gun thinks he doesn't know. It's empty gun. He thinks
he's going to be
killed. He's going to be killed.
Mm.
And the one who even has his own finger on the trigger, he knows there is no bullet in it. If the guy in front of him, jumps on him, what is he going to do? Nothing. He has no bullets. So two persons are afraid of one empty gun. This is when you don't have the true knowledge.
Exactly.
Then you fear,
quite.
You have no power.
Very eloquent.
That's why you become simple. That's why you become humble, when you have a true knowledge. And true knowledge comes from
the true source.
Remember, I didn't say true teacher, because we don't call God teacher.
No. The true source.
That's a different story.
Yeah, the truth. Okay? The truth, that's
a
what
true
we're talking
source
about.
Is the most knowledge one, the most powerful one, the most wise one.
Yes.
I even shouldn't say the most, because when I use the word the most, It sounds like I'm comparing something with, something else.
Sure.
But there is no way to comparison. Sure. The wise, the might, the knowledge one.
Yes.
So, the real source.
These are the sifat you're talking
God,
about. God.
Yeah,
the attributes, the names.
The names.
Yes.
Which actually is action, yeah. Which is power.
Yes.
When you're talking about God, you're not talking about the identity, the true sense of God. You can't do that.
No.
There's a tradition.
Hmm. Please quote it.
Tradition says, don't think about God, about the sense, the true sense of God. But if you want to get to know God, think about the benefits, or we call it ni'mah, the things that he gave us, which they become, they become sign of God, sign of his knowledge, his being, his power, and his mercy. Imam was simple because of this, because in the Quran.
Yes.
If you get to know Quran, you become simple. You don't need to get complicated. You don't need to get sophisticated.
Dr. Hasni, thank you for that, what you've said so far, in terms of the discussion of the personality of the Imam. The simplicity, the honesty, these beautiful values that take us towards Allah, because really what we are talking about, the end of the day.
Brother, the point is this. If we get to know Imam Khomeini, peace be upon him, the way we're supposed to.
Yes.
Okay?
Yes.
We become a good follower.
Yeah.
We cannot go astray.
No
matter
can't.
What.
No.
We always are steadfast on the right track, doing the right thing, of course, from A to B without any damage.
Well, the thing is that you come back to that legacy of the Holy Prophet, peace be upon him, who was not able to put that down in words, but the Imam certainly did, and we hopefully will discuss that at a later stage as well. And that is that he talked about two things. He talked about the two legacies that the Holy Prophet left. That was the Quran and his family, the Itrati. And that was a principle. Let's continue this discussion into the next program, and we're going to look at...
God willing, we are going to.
Yeah,
if we get the chance,
we
are going to...
We'll look at other aspects of this simplicity,
exactly.
Honesty,
mm-hmm.
and the purity of intention. Mm-hmm. I want to go into this aspect.
Purity, that's a good subject
yeah,
also.
Yeah. God so let's do that into the next program. Thank you, listeners, for being on the... for listening to us today. Wassalamu alaykum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Thank you for giving me a chance to do so.
No, that's all right, Doctor. You're welcome, Dr. Hasni. And may the peace and blessings and mercy of Allah be upon you all. Thank you and goodbye.
Thank you, brother.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad wa ajil tarajahum.
Hello and welcome to the light. It's good to have you. Beginning with our canine companions, the sniffing abilities of dogs are being put to the test at a leading French veterinary laboratory where dogs are being trained to detect the coronavirus. Five dogs from the canine brigades of the French National Gendarmerie have been training since early January. They sniff at a number of vessels, each containing a piece of cloth with human sweat. Some samples are from patients with COVID-19, negative donors, or even neutral scents. When the canine shows interest in a vessel with a COVID-19 sample, it is rewarded.
It will soon be necessary to screen asymptomatic people in all kinds of spaces, schools, nursing homes, which must continue to be better understood and defined, and airports. This type of tool, which makes it possible to offer at least one strong criterion of suspicion, will facilitate the whole process in terms of user-friendliness, accessibility, and reactivity.
Well, the dog's keen sense of smell is said to be able to detect the coronavirus in 95% of positive cases. It's hoped that the canines will be able to detect COVID-positive people even if they show no symptoms. The animals can be used as a non-invasive way of testing for the viral infection, as well as many other life-threatening illnesses. Igloo, a dome-shaped structure made of snow and ice, gives us an idea of the Inuit of Arctic. But hang on. The ski resort hotel in Indian-controlled Kashmir has come up with a similar idea to attract visitors. The Kolahoy Green Heights has an igloo cafe where tourists can enjoy hot drinks and food in sub-zero temperatures. Even the tables in the Eskimo-style cafe are made of ice and snow. As many as 16 people can sit and chill out in the igloo at any given time. The icy cafe is 25 feet around. Unlike those on the Arctic, this particular igloo has elements of local architecture, like an arched door and patterns on the curved walls.
A French-Swiss artist spray paints a huge fresco on the grounds of Cape Town as part of a global project aimed at